Hey, it's Bob Stauffer. I just wanted to let you know that you can listen to Oilers Now ad-free on Amazon Music, included with Prime.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Oilers Now with Bob Stauffer. Weekdays at noon on Oilers Radio, 630 CHED.
We're going to head off to the River Cree Resort and Casino Hotline. Mondays and Wednesdays in Oilers Now, we're joined by our NHL insider, John Shannon, for Legacy Heating and Cooling. Whether it's heating or cooling you need, get it with no payments and no interest for a year. That's how you build a legacy, Legacy Heating and Cooling. He grew up in Western Canada. He spent a lot of years producing the games in the West. He lives now in TO during the regular season. And back to Penticton for a patch in the summer. We welcome back to the show, John Shannon. John, how you doing?
I'm great, Bob. How are you?
Good. We're having a conversation today about Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl, regular season award. Hey, look, Austin Matthews had an awesome year, scored 60 goals. Matthews and Marner on the first All-Star team. Draisaitl didn't seem to get a lot of support. Give me your overall assessment. Should anybody feel as though maybe McDavid was a little overlooked? Is he being judged differently? Or was it just a byproduct of Matthews having a tremendous campaign?
Well, first of all, Austin Matthews did have a great year. And it's difficult to avoid having somebody play in the Eastern time zone as many games as Matthews did, and more teams in the Eastern time zone and people watch than any other part of the continent. I think that's a factor. I also think, Bob, and I think I've mentioned this before, that there's a couple of things. That Connor now is almost on his own category, and it's comparable to what we saw in the 80s, anybody but Gretzky. You know, when you ran your neighborhood hockey pool,
yep.
You know, anybody but Gretzky, right? And I think Connor's almost at that level. I think that the level at which Connor plays and Connor is perceived, if somebody comes close to him, then they're going to get noticed. And I think that's exactly what happened when it came to the Hart Trophy. I also think that Leon probably split a few votes. I haven't seen the voting. I should have paid attention more to it last night. But quite frankly, I'm awarded out right now. The other thing I found fascinating was Johnny Gaudreau, who I think should have been in the Hart Trophy category, made the first All-Star team, but didn't make the Hart Trophy nominations. And I don't understand that.
Well, is it because of position? Like, should they just award three forwards instead of you have to be a left wing or you have to be a right wing? Just pick the three best forwards, because you could end up with two centers like Matthews and McDavid or even Draisaitl.
Yes, I think you should, and because you know as well as I do now, Bobby, they don't play the game. The only time you play the game by position is at the faceoff circle.
Yeah.
And the rest of the time, it's free-flowing. And by the way, they're having the same issue in the NBA. They've had this same discussion in the NBA. Pick the five best players for the All-Star team in the NBA. And I think you should be picking the three best forwards, period, the two best defensemen. Obviously, you don't determine a left defenseman or right defenseman, do you? And so I do think you should probably be determining the three best forwards. I also think that there are a few, and this will irk a few of my friends in the writers' world and those who vote. I think there needs to be a revamping of how the awards are voted on. I think there needs to be a smaller group of writers that have a higher level of knowledge of the game. And that's not to knock all the writers and all the people that are involved, but there are a lot of people that, you know, cover their own team haven't traveled for a couple of years, and they're only concerned about the 82 games of their own team. I'll tell you what, Bob, it is hard. It's hard to cover this whole league. When you think there's over 1,300 regular season games now, it's difficult to even watch two or three a night. for a season that was 200 days long.
John,
so I think the league has to somehow, some way, with the help of the Professional Hockey Writers Association, find a new voting pattern, a new group that would help create another level for some of these awards.
It's funny, I said it's all about perspective, and Matthews had a great year, and I don't want to denigrate what he accomplished, but I have some empathy for McDavid in the position that it's almost like he's being judged differently. And I had some guy, oh, you work for the Oilers, and I'm like, yeah, well, who owns Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment? Take a look there. And it's not just writers. There's select broadcasters that are a part of it. We vote on the coach of the year. I brought up this, and I know you and me have privately discussed this. I mean, McDavid finished with 123 points, Matthews with 106. Well, the Oilers' 5-on-5 shooting percentage with McDavid on the ice was 8.3. The last 2 years, when the Oilers players Drysdale and McDavid won the MVP, they were about 11%. Guess what Matthews was at this year? 11.73%. That's what the Leafs shot the puck at when he was. This was an abnormally statistically low finishing rate in the regular season for the Oilers when McDavid was on the ice. And guess what happened in the playoffs? The inverse happened, where McDavid ended up with Drysdale. They pretty much shot the lights out. Might end up winning the scoring race in the playoffs and not even playing in the final. And conversely, I mean, we're sitting here with Matthews and Marner playing 39 career playoff games. Each got 33 points. Connor did that this year, 33 points in 16 games, and has two more playoff series wins this year than either Matthews and Marner. So I guess it's all about perspective. But I do appreciate, like, you're letting our listeners know point blank, you do believe that there is an advantage to players in the Eastern time zone.
100%. I mean, listen, it's just a fact. When you have that many more people living in the Eastern time zone, the Edmonton Oilers were a great story this year on television in the playoffs for in both countries, by the way. And as good as they were, they couldn't draw 70% of what the Maple Leafs drew.
Yeah,
that's just a fact. There's nothing we can do about it. That's just a true delineation of, you know, 2-hour time difference, less population. We have to deal with it. We don't like it, but we have to deal with it. And it becomes something you factor in on a day-to-day basis. What really happened this year, Bob, in so many ways, was that America got turned on to the Oilers in the playoffs, got turned on against in the L.A. series, got turned on in the Battle of Alberta. And that might change something now because of that fact. But only because, you know, games were available, games were at better times, most of them, and they got national exposure in the U.S. So maybe things will change. I have my doubts because I've been around this league for almost 45 years, and it's never changed, other than when Wayne forced everybody to change it. But other than that, everybody in Edmonton should be proud of what McDavid does, what Dreisaitl does, and go from there and enjoy it and sail off into the sunset.
All right, John. Jay Woodcroft, we had him on the show earlier today. 3-year contract extension, the worst kept secret in hockey over the last week. No surprise. You know, you take a look at the improvement that Edmonton made under Jay, it was quite significant. I don't know if it's totally sustainable, and I got to find my sheet. There it is. The team had a 7.24 winning percentage or points percentage under Woodcroft, tied for second in the league, plus 40 in goal differential. That was second in the league, fifth in goals, 4 under Woodcroft at 3.82, fifth in goals against at 2.76,
yep.
fourth in 5-on-5 goal share, which had been a challenge for Edmonton over the last 2.5+ years under Dave Tippett, where we need to state Tippett and Jim Playfair had a lot of success dramatically improving the Oilers' special teams, but the 5-on-5 play was a concern, and the Oilers ended up fourth in goal share, 5-on-5, under Jay Woodcroft. Jay was on, said the team needs to improve their team defense. I concur with that. Give me your assessment first on Woodcroft being back, and then a second follow-up is, what do you envision happening with the rest of the staff?
Well, first of all, you're right about no surprise, no secret. I think it was the right marriage. It would have been nice to announce it at the end of the regular season, but there had to be something proved in the playoffs, and I think more than anything that those first two series proved a great deal about what Jay Woodcroft does for a hockey club. You know, he created accountability. He was very direct. He had a really calm demeanor. And I think that at the age of 45, he's a modern-day professional hockey coach. And I think that there's something to be said for that. When the rest of the league appears to be going in another direction with veteran coaches, I think it's a breath of fresh air in Edmonton to see Woodcroft get this chance and have proved himself over the duration of the regular season and the duration of the three rounds of playoffs. Sustainable? I actually think it is sustainable, Bob, because two things. First of all, I think that what we saw was the top six guys bought in, and that's important. And secondly, I foresee that with Jay's input, Kenny Holland getting players that are complementary to the way Woodcroft wants to coach. And I think that will only enhance what's going on in Edmonton. Now, who that is, I can't give you an answer. I think we're still too early. But I think that we've always talked about McDavid making Edmonton attractive. We talked about Draisaitl and the arena making Edmonton attractive. I think Jay Woodcroft makes as another example of what makes Edmonton attractive as this team goes forward. As far as coaching staff, I think it's just a matter of checking a few extra boxes to see Dave Manson back. That was a really good combination with Woodcroft and Manson coming from Bakersfield. What happens to Brian and to Glenn, I'm not sure at this point.
Okay. I'd be remiss without asking a follow-up pertaining to Evander Kane. I know we briefly have discussed this, but is there any way this could get resolved before the requirement of the arbitrator?
Well, the arbitration papers have been served.
Yes.
The only way it would get resolved in a hypothetical manner, I believe, Bob, is if San Jose agrees to pay a negotiated fee, if not all of his money that he's owed.
Yeah.
Because that's what the grievance is. The grievance isn't that he's not playing in San Jose. Is the grievance is that he was dismissed with cause and forfeited the rest of his guaranteed money. So if San Jose walked in and said, "Oh, by the way, we're gonna negotiate a fee with Dan Milstein and I assume through Bill Daly and the guys at the NHL office," then it could go away. But I don't see that happening. I mean, that's not what big companies do. They wait for arbitrators and let the arbitrator solve it.
Yeah. Well, it's going to be interesting, to say the least. Who do you got tonight?
I think Tampa wins again.
Yeah.
I think what we're seeing, and I don't think we saw it 100%. Everybody was raving about Andrei Vasilevskiy. I thought he was better in game three. I also think that, and I think we saw this, is that Colorado found that little chink in the armor, which was high over the blocker side. So you have to wonder if they're going to go back to that. But to me, this is the night that Vasilevskiy shines. And this is a drag him out, slow, plodding game compared to the others as Tampa controls the pace and Tampa wins.
John, I lied. I have one more question, and it pertains to the Edmonton Oil Kings and the WHL at the Memorial Cup. You know the numbers. The last victory for the WHL champion at the Memorial Cup was in the semifinal game in 2015 when Leon Draisaitl, Josh Morrissey, and you worked that event for sports.
Yeah.
And I think they beat the Ramparts 9-3. Anyhow, they lost 2-1 to Oshawa in the final. Oshawa is a well-coached, big, heavy, tough team that knocked off Connor McDavid. David and Erie that year.
Well, who scored the two goals is the guy who's going to play tonight, Anthony
Cirelli. Yeah, he was terrific for Oshawa. And obviously, DJ Smith was part of that group as well. So here's where I'm going to take you. So they didn't win a, you know, the Brandon was the WHL champion in 2016. They didn't win a game. Seattle was the Ethan Barrett WHL champion in 2017, two beat up. They didn't win a game at the Memorial Cup. Manny Viveros had Swift Current there in 2018. They didn't win a game. 2019 was PA. They didn't win a game. So that's 12 straight over those 4 years, plus the loss in the 15 final and the Edmonton Oil Kings loss yesterday. If the Oil Kings lose tonight, does there need to be a little bit of reflection from the people in the Western Hockey League about the size of the league, 22 teams, and maybe not having as much depth as some, like, you know, Ontario's got 20 teams, they got 14.5 million people. There's not 14.5 million people making up Manitoba, Saskatchewan, Alberta, BC for the Western League. What do you think? Am I out to lunch? Am I quibbling too much here? Or is there maybe something to it?
Well, listen, when you're traveling three time zones, as they did from Edmonton to St. John, that's one factor I think you have to put on yep. the players for the first game. I think the second game is a better measure of really what happens. This is another level. And as much as you think that, you know, they beat Seattle in the championship, you know, going to the Memorial Cup is another level. And the way things are handled, it's almost at the NHL level from a protocol perspective. So I think the orientation of one game might be a little too much to start worrying about losing streaks. Ask me this question after they...
I'll text you tonight. I'm going to text you tonight.
Yeah, because okay. That's the one. If they lose two in a row, then that's another story. I don't think that you change the format at all. I mean, hey, what happens when the tournament ends up being in the West? You have to perform at home, and so I wouldn't mind seeing a whole new format for Memorial Cup. But if somebody has a new one, tell me what it is, because this seems to be the only one that seems to work for everyone.
John, great stuff. Thanks for your time.
Cheers.
I want to tell you that our friends at Brent Ridge Ford have a few units in stock and more on the way. You can check with Uncle Milt, Rich, Johnny and the gang to see if they have the right vehicle for you. If not, they can order one and get you the exact specifications that you want. But hurry, because their order bank is getting full out at Brent Ridge Ford in Wetaskiwin, where cars cost less. If you want to be treated fairly when you buy a vehicle and get outstanding service, call the team at Brent Ridge Ford, 1-877-477-FORD. That's 1-877-477-3673. Brent Ridge Ford is your Ford truck authority on the Auto Mile in Wetaskiwin. When we come back, this day in Oilers history, you're listening to Oilers Now. It's 1:51 in Edmonton. All season long, the Oilers Now lineup report is brought to you on game days by Craig Hummel at REMAX Excellence. Buying your dream home, sell your old home, sold today, edmonton.ca. It is 1:52 in Edmonton as we head to this day in Oilers history for New West Travel. Here's Brendan.
2000 is the year when the Oilers announced Craig McTavish as the new head coach of the franchise following Kevin Lowe's departure from behind the bench to the front office. Lowe took over as the general manager after Glenn Sather retired in May of that year. McTavish coaching the Oil from 2000 through 2009. He won 301 of 656 regular season games, led the team to the 2006 Cup Final.
2000, on this date, how old were you, Brendan? Six or seven?
I was four? No, six. Six is right, yeah.
So, there you go. Wow. I remember that whole thing happening. Cal Nichols had taken over as chairman of the board of the Edmonton Investors Group, and Glenn Sather was resigned and went off to New York for more money. So what happens? It's a business, right? Coming up tonight on 6:30 Chet, we'll tell you Game 4 of the Stanley Cup Final between Colorado and Tampa, live from Amalie Arena just after 6 p.m. Tomorrow, a couple of our guests will include Brian Lawton from the NHL Network, the former GM of the Lightning, the man who drafted both Steven Stamkos and Victor Hedman, and former Tampa Bay Lightning and better known as an Edmonton Oilers player and an Edmonton Oilers broadcaster, Sportsnet color analyst, Louis DeBrusque for GCL Diesel. We'll rejoin you tomorrow at noon. Coming up, a global news weather traffic update with Kevin Robertson, followed by Rob Breckeners from 2 to 3. Then the 6:30 Chet afternoons with Jalen Nye from 3 to 6. Game 4 Stanley Cup Final tonight on 6:30 Chet, beginning at 6 p.m.
Oilers Now with Bob Stauffer. Weekdays at noon on Oilers Radio, 6:30 Chet.
I'm not just a pawn in this game.
Three nights a week on Global.
They're putting targets on their back. Massive.
Drama.
I guess you could say I'm in a showman.
They're just so in love and so annoying. Enough.
Betrayal.
The guy just put up his best friend now.
And plot twists.
What is happening right now?
You'll never see coming.
If you're coming for me,
this is perfect.
I'm coming for you then.
It'll be a battle.
Like, it'll be war.
Big Brother Canada. All new Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Sundays on Global. Stream on Stack TV.